Rick. Get our team together here. I can't bang my gavel if we're all here.
Ken. I fixed that for you.
Okay, thank you. Bang my gavel, okay. All right, call to order the October 2018 meeting of the Curie Beach Planning and Zoning Commission. First item on the agenda is approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Second item is approval of the meeting minutes from September 5th of 2018. Why don't we just take a minute and look at this and just see if there's any recommended changes. Are there any changes or is there a motion?
So moved to accept the minutes presented.
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, next item is public comments. Any public comments? Nope, hearing none. We go to our next item, which is old business, which is permissible uses for churches in the RA-1 district. Again, just as a reminder, we had a discussion last meeting about this, and the commission raised a number of issues, and the recommendation is to kind of go back and rethink it and maybe put together a proposal. Should point out that I was emailed this yesterday with a suggestion that I look at it and kind of get back to them, but you know, unfortunately I didn't have a chance to respond. But my opinion generally is to not do that individually, to have that as an open discussion, you know, rather than an individual kind of responding that sort of way. So, you know, that you know, so I haven't really looked at this or, you know, gotten any feedback to the proposal here. So anyway, this is what's before us.
Chairman, are we doing a formal review and report tonight?
Yes, we are. This is we can certainly table it, but this is on the agenda. We put it last time. It was tabled for tonight's agenda item, so this is old business and on the agenda, so we could approve it.
I thought this would come up for discussion or be revised by staff before it all got.
Well, it might, but you know, it's.
We do not have a consistency statement.
Right. Okay. Prepared,
but it's a matter that would require one.
Yes. Yes. We have done quick and fast consistency statements in the past. Let's see how the discussion goes before we get to that point, if that's okay. Okay. Let's kind of open it up. Is there anybody here to kind of present this?
Hi, my name's Ronnie Wimberly. I'm responsible for different ministries at Curie Beach First Baptist. And we have two buildings that are behind our main facility that are joined together. They're about 39 feet long and 28 feet wide. I just submitted a drawing to John tonight. He just has seen it. In regards to some of the plumbing work that we want done, there is plumbing in the building already. We want to expand that, and we want to make that facility available for ministry work by other visiting churches. We have a bunch of kids that come down every summer, and they typically have to rent hotels, motels, townhomes, or anybody sleep where they want to, or sleep on the floor in the church. And so what we wanted to do is make it available for those kids when they come, and also some of the men, occasionally, or women that come on different retreats for a few days from visiting churches, that they're able to come down. The work that the kids do is in the community. They go out primarily to witness to other kids that they see on the beach. They also hold Bible drill camps down on the beach during the day, and naturally they visit the different businesses around, so feel like it might be good for the economy too. The other purpose for those buildings is in case of emergency like we just had, which didn't call for it, but the American Red Cross has designated our center, our church, as a place for disaster relief efforts for them to be able to come. And also, we had the Baptist men that actually had called me, they call it the NAM organization, which is all of the missions group within North America Mission Board, and wanted to know, would we be available if they came down and offered relief to the community, not just our church, but they would be able to stay there, stage things there, and be able to operate out of our church after a catastrophe, such as a hurricane. So those are the purposes that we would like to use those buildings. The buildings, it would be on a temporary basis. In fact, the new wording that we brought back based on the last meeting were it'd be temporary, not to exceed 14 days of any visiting group. That doesn't apply necessarily to disaster relief and responders that would come after a hurricane. They can stay as long as they like, it's, you know, in order to facilitate why they came. But it's not for different things in the community, for example, for the homeless, or for alcoholic rehabilitation. I know some churches hold those kinds of meetings already. We do not. We don't plan to house or sleep individuals such as that. It's strictly for visiting churches, youth groups, and for emergency use. So that's it. That's what we'd like to do.
Okay. You know, we talked about this last time, and you already raised one of the issues, is that, you know, not as a rehab center and things like that we were concerned about. The other thing that kind of came up, and I know you're addressing it here, but the idea that, you know, at least some of us had a bit of concern that this might be used as a kind of an in-house hotel, as a revenue-generating type of process. I mean, it's obviously an attractive place here in Curie Beach to bring people down. You know, certainly there are camps in the mountains that do this on a regular basis, and I think one of the concerns, at least I had, was that does this process create something where we're going to have 30 kids or groups of 30 every 2 weeks coming down like a camp type of situation, which isn't really, at least in my opinion, what we're trying to do with this particular thing. So that was my concern.
Yeah. And the other thing, I'm glad you mentioned that, we're not asking them to provide any revenues when they come. We're not setting a rate for them to come and stay there like a lot of camps do. You know, they're designated to do that. We're just asking them to help us offset the utility bills, power, and water, and that's it. If that's done on a voluntary basis, if they can't do it, then we're okay with that. We would have to absorb that, but it's strictly for ministry. That's it. And those buildings now currently used, you know, for Sunday school meetings. In fact, Sunday I have my class in there. So we actually go out the back into that building, set our chairs up, and we have Sunday school in those buildings, especially when we have an overflow of people that come. And parking's not an issue. It's right on 6th Avenue. So the median in between the roads and the parking that we have in front of the church is able to facilitate it. I know a question came up, a good question, about if we did allow individuals to come from other churches, which we have, and they've parked there, they just have to sleep in other places, not because we're not equipped to do that, that we would be able to accommodate them. Typically, they don't come in trailway buses kind of things. They come in those small 15-seater vans. That's typically what we've seen. Some of them might be 20, 25 seaters, but that's it. And we've been able to accommodate that kind of parking so far.
What would be the max number of the capability for sleeping there?
We were getting ready to try to define that. We don't know what that would be, but
are you talking 15 or 50, you think?
Probably 15 or 16 on each side. We could, if we develop both sides.
That's going to be governed by the building code.
But it would be, yeah, there you go. Thank you.
Questions, yeah?
Yeah, a couple. I went down and looked at the buildings. Like I said, Annex building doesn't do justice to what these buildings are. They withstood the hurricane easily. So I guess, and looking that we're changing this ordinance, not just for their church, we had other places places of worship on the island that may want to consider this ordinance with them. So we are looking forward to that. I'd like, we could, you know, use outbuilding or annex or something to better describe, because it is a substantial, it just isn't a trailer.
Right.
When I heard annex, I thought it was something like this. Right. So it is a well-built building. The other thing, and when we rewrite this, I guess, council, do we have to specifically, like you said, for catastrophe, 14 days, you know, it could be 3 weeks. Do we need to somehow expand that for hurricane relief or something?
Yeah,
like that?
I quote the same thing. I really think we need to say something like,
yeah,
catastrophic relief is exempt from that 14 days.
Exactly.
Just
something like that.
Just a simple sentence.
Yeah, but yeah.
Can I comment on those?
Yes, yeah, please.
In my first reading of this, I think the gist of what everybody wants is there, but I definitely think it can be drafted more tightly. For example, I would first look at accessory buildings, how it's defined, to make sure that we don't need a different definition, such as church-related accessory buildings. I don't know, I'm just off the top of my head. Third line down, may be used, I would put only. On the next line down, after temporary basis, I would reword that parenthetical to provide a definition for the purposes of this provision, what a temporary basis, how those words are to be construed. For next to the bottom, three lines up from the bottom, very ambiguous to say a catastrophe situation. Do you want to tie it, for example, to disasters occurring in a local or federal or state designated state of emergency? Because otherwise it's very vague.
Are you writing down these bullet points?
I've written them down for me.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I'm serious scribbling away, so okay.
Right after generating revenues, that line reads as if
here's
it's...
Here's one that describes height.
That line reads as if it's permissible. That line, the next to the line up from the bottom, reads as if it is permissible to generate revenues for overhead costs. I would suggest playing around with language that specifies voluntary charitable contributions, something along those lines. I'd also note, based on the December minutes, that
Can I jump into that right there? Just real quick, because that's got me a little concerned too. Again, I'm an economist, so I think financial type of terminology. Overhead cost is kind of a very nebulous type of term. The way you just defined it as a voluntary contribution would mean that, I assume your church is a 501c3 designation. So it would have to be a 501c3 voluntary designation.
Or utilities. And
well, just call it a charitable contribution. Which means that you can't set...
All right, charitable contribution pursuant to the church's status...
As a 501c3, yeah. You know, that would be a better way, because then you can't set a rate on that.
Okay. Good. Going on, by looking at the September minutes, the commission expressed several concerns which I don't think have been addressed yet. Rehab facility and homeless shelter must be expressly prohibited. That's not the case in this draft proposal. No revenue generating activity, no rent charge, we've discussed that. Temporary must be clearly defined, we've discussed that. Parking doesn't seem to be an issue. The other maximum timeline is in there, but I think we can reword that more sufficiently. So my suggestion to you is, and that's where I was coming from in the beginning, do we have this discussion and you task staff to make any changes you think are necessary and we table it and pick it up again next month? Mm-hmm. Or do we somehow or another put a package together and send it up to council? I think it'd be a very awkward package.
Can we, what I would suggest is that we finish the discussion and see if there's other bullet points that you might write down and then have a discussion as to, one, is this time sensitive? Is it something that you're trying to get approved like in a month or so, or is it
that
something that
before September 14th?
Yeah.
Low.
So, all right. Well, anyway, let's continue the discussion here. Is there any...
Council, I have one. Other places of worship, would that be a concern?
I don't... that's an interesting catch that I had not thought of. But I guess... and
only because I'm thinking people can have... congregations within their home. I think that's allowed.
You've got temples as opposed to churches.
Well, that's right.
What would you do if you had a satanic worshiping group?
Yeah.
It's reference to
well, yeah, you know, you go
32 and 26.
This is 326.
So it is, would that, to the buildings in the line. Would that...
I think we could run with the... You know, again, when you're construing a statute, you take the common... Unless you provide a specific definition, the rules of interpretation say you use the common meaning.
And okay.
I don't think there'd be too much dispute about the common meaning of places of worship.
Okay. Good. All right.
Do you have the code book in front of you? Could you look at section 19-1, which is the definition of accessory? That's what we've been using last month. And then notice that it refers to section 19-322. And 19-326. And when you go over to 19-326, it talks a little bit more about the siting and location of an accessory building on a residential lot. Since this is a residential zone, I assume that would apply in this particular case. Do you see any need to fine-tune the definitions that are provided here based upon... Because we may be opening up kind of a hornet's nest if we start allowing accessory buildings on residential lots to be used for housing, basically.
That's sort of what I was hinting at in my remarks. Let me look at 326 for a second. Well, let me ask somebody, does the accessory building in this particular case comply with the 326 location requirements?
Well, I would definitely say it's in the rear yard, yes, sir.
Yeah, not near a setback.
I think the 326 would be caught either in a, and again, I don't recall what you all do, but there must be a zoning compliance process as, in addition to the building permit. So I think in all, and otherwise it'd be non-conforming. So I don't know that that 326 presents an issue that requires any amendments. I think the requirement is caught.
What I would kind of get at, I mean, this particular case, 326 is satisfied, but if we're talking about other churches, they may want to have it, then 326 would apply that they can only have an accessory building in the rear yard, is the way I would.
Yeah, well, then we want to keep the definition to accessory building, that's true.
Yeah. Well, I'm still trying to, do we have churches that have accessory buildings in the front yard, and wouldn't they be non-conforming based
well,
on this provision?
I don't know if they call it accessory building, but the Lutheran had some buildings. Mm-hmm. On the side.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's front or back.
I mean, you either, at this stage of the game, look, somebody's going to build a new church, it's caught. If it's not going to be built and it's existing, it either complies with this or it's a non-conforming situation that is okay unless altered.
Okay.
Missing something?
I mean, we could name it a different thing other than accessory buildings. I feel like what they're trying to capture with this one is that it's a permitted use under section 2 altogether, mm-hmm. or number 2 altogether, and they're just calling it an accessory building because that's kind of what brought us here was the number 4 under permitted uses. So,
yeah. Which one are we trying to amend? What's the section?
92.
John, if you left out references to the accessory building, would the amendment, the gist of the amendment still work? Or do we need
I just mentioned that because, we're getting hung up on that determination and wanting to allow them to do this.
So what you're saying is not even referencing in the proposed language the word accessory building. That it becomes a simple exception for churches, but we'd have to make sure then that the accessory building definition is kind of incorporated in there, and that it has to be in the rear yard, and there's, you know, the setbacks are required, be same requirements.
That was off the top of my head. I mean, maybe we need to keep it in there, maybe not, but
that's an R.
Going back to my original point.
That's where he's going into 1992.
Well, the other thing to think about with 19322 and 19326 are specifically calling out residential buildings in both of those ordinances.
Right. And that in 1992, it specifically excludes rented or occupied for accessory buildings. Right. So this would be an exception to that, is what we're really talking about right there. So I defer to our attorney. Do you think it'd be better to, rather than tweak the accessory building issue here, is to simply figure out a way through the language to accomplish the same thing, but not applying the accessory building definition, call it something else?
Chairman, again, I'm at a bit of a disadvantage because I haven't had an opportunity to think about this or analyze it.
What?
And a spot decision is kind of tricky given what you all are talking about.
Right. What I would suggest is that maybe we just go down and see what the consensus of the commission is and fine-tune the bullet points that are of concern are, and then maybe table this item to allow staff to work on the language and the best way to approach it.
I appreciate that, too. I just received this morning also.
Okay. First of all, let me just do kind of a general. Are people generally in favor of this?
I'm okay.
Okay, so let's make sure that we have the bullet points.
With the right bullet
points. Yeah, with the right bullet points. So let's make sure that we have the right bullet points according to the commission, then maybe table this item and put it off for the next meeting and allow staff to figure out the best way to come forward with the right language.
Chairman, could you, and I apologize, could the commission again discuss and perhaps articulate what the concern was about, quote, accessory building, end quote? I don't really haven't grasped what you were talking about.
Oh, well, accessory building is referred to, I think the issue is accessory building is referred to several times in the code here in section 19. One, there's a definition of it.
All right, let's take it piece by piece.
Okay.
I think the definition fits the subject. Do you agree with that, section 19.1?
I don't know. That was kind of your point.
I don't know. That, I guess, John, is the accessory building mainly is considered a shed? Because hold on. It talks about not being occupied and not being rented. Now that I've reread that, it's almost like an accessory building is a barn or large.
But so all the zonings do mention accessory buildings as part of the permitted uses.
Right.
As far as the definition is concerned, I think where we got thrown off is that it references section 19.322 and 19.326.
Yeah.
And so when you read either one of those ordinances, it's specifically talking about accessory structures in conjunction with a residential use.
I totally agree with that. So
yeah, that's
if you went with that reasoning, 322 and 326 doesn't present an issue. Look at 19.1 without getting to that parenthetical, shall mean a subordinate building, the use of which is incidental to the principal building. In that context, I think it is an accessory building.
Okay.
I don't disagree. I threw out the idea of changing the terminology from accessory building to something else just so that we wouldn't get
right
on that.
Okay.
That is another approach, but if you agree that the definition fits and if you agree that 322 and 326 is focused on residential and we don't have that here, do we have an issue, Chairman, regarding the reference to it as an accessory building?
No, I don't have a major problem, but I'm kind of leaning towards the idea that when I see the definition of accessory building, just by the definition of it, and you talk about a subordinate building, the use of which is incidental. So you got the word subordinate in there and the word incidental in there. To me, a kind of a well-built structure that's large, that has two wings on it, that's housing 30 people, a possibility of 30 people in beds, and is rented on a weekly or bi-weekly, not, I won't say rented because it's going to be a volunteer sort of thing, but occupied on a weekly or bi-weekly basis. To me, that doesn't satisfy the word of subordinate or incidental.
Let me ask you, the pastor, sorry, are you a pastor?
No, I'm just a lay pastor.
What, just out of curiosity, what's the name you have for that building?
We actually asked last meeting, why was it called accessory building when we use it?
In your church, what do you all call
Sunday
that
school?
Building?
We just say the building out back, we're going to have Sunday school this week.
Out of the Sunday school building, did you call it?
Well, we just call it the building out back.
That'll work.
The out back building. We'll use that definition.
Yeah, it's not incidental use. It's used.
That's why I'm a little worried about
it. It's used now.
All right, let me ask another question. John, is there anything else in the definition that fits that building? I didn't see any other definitions regarding secondary buildings on the lot.
I really think if you and I could work on this, we could come up with some language that would fit.
Well, does annex work? Or is there another definition for annex?
I think John's right. We can come up with a definition.
You could call it maybe a secondary building, which has a little more of a primacy kind of feel to it, to some subordinate building or something like that. So
then the churches that have had annex buildings,
whatever we call it.
Yeah, an annex sounds good.
Look at that. Permitted use. I mean, it does include places of worship, parish houses, and Sunday schools. All we need to do is really elaborate on those and should be able to get where we need.
Well, we're just raising the issues, and certainly I think that the two of you can work out the best way to either work it with the language as an exemption to the accessory building kind of definition, or come up with a different definition called an annex or a secondary building or something like that. But the bullet points, I think, are the key thing that we're worried about right now.
So to summarize, we want to avoid referring to these types of church-related structures as accessory buildings. We're going to call it something else.
Let's figure out a name for it and then make a definition for that word. Okay. That might be the easiest way to do it.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah. Okay. And the bullet points, I think you've defined the bullet points of the charitable contribution, the concern about what type of occupants might be there, the temporary component of it, the catastrophe definition.
To go with my suggestion that the catastrophe be reworded to refer to disasters occurring within a local, state, or federal declaration of emergency?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's good.
Absolutely.
And that 14-day limitation is exempted from that.
Right.
Yeah. It's exempted. Is that what we're doing? Expanding temporary for a natural disaster?
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's exempted, for natural disasters, declared natural disasters, the 14 days would be exempted.
I understand Red Cross did call you already on this one.
They
see if you were available.
In fact, I meant to bring the piece of paper that they designated us as Red Cross.
If we're going to have a different definition than accessory, personally, I think that we have to be careful that as accessory is defined in other parts in Section 19 about being located into the behind buildings and things like that. I think those should still be there, even if we call it something else. Because I don't think we want accessory buildings in the front, for example.
I don't think we'll mess with anything in the code about accessory buildings.
No, but in terms of the setbacks and all these sort of requirements that are defined for accessory buildings, and that it needs to be in the back of the building, with that section 326.
The new word that we're going, now think about that. If we're going to come up with a new word and define it to fit the occasion, then we're going to have to go in and come up with other text amendments to cover
the setbacks and those sort of things.
So you're talking about a pretty comprehensive rewrite about...
Well, that, I think that's where you guys would be deciding the best way to do it, whether you want to call it something else, and then you're right, you know, then we would have to have setback requirements and...
We have to go into every district and revise that.
Or fine-tune the definition of an accessory building. You might be able to do it with two different subcategories of accessory buildings. That might be the best way to do it, is keep it under accessory buildings and call it accessory buildings small, accessory buildings large, or something like that.
That might be the only way to avoid. Remember when we did setbacks, that was huge.
Right.
We went into 20 different provisions. So.
Yeah, I think that would be the best way, just call it a different category of an accessory building. And then we don't have to change all the other...
Yeah.
Setback requirements.
Let me just setback requirements. In other words, accessory buildings, categories. Let's just make sure we got all the other bullets. So we've covered the need to explain what an accessory building is in this case, may be used only for housing, yada, yada, yada. Are you all comfortable with the way it's, are you comfortable with what they say you can use it for? In other words, are you comfortable with limiting it to the following? Housing, visiting church groups for the sole purpose of conducting faith-based activities on a temporary basis, define what temporary is. Are you okay with that? Mm-hmm.
I'll just raise the issue, why limit it to faith-based activities? You know, it seems to me that, you know, visiting church groups would be fine for me. You know, visiting faith-based activities imply that specifically these folks are out there evangelizing or do something like that, I think.
Yeah, I think that's good, limited to for housing, visiting church groups. We'll cover the disaster business. We're going to get into 501c3. Now, I've always troubled. That's 501 parens, little c, close parens, parens, three, close parens?
Yes.
I always have a hard time remembering them. Be quiet, man. Did you know what I was talking about?
I was just trying to spin it.
All right, those are the bullets that... I think we're all on the same page, and I appreciate your all's patience with me.
Let me just go down and make sure there's any other bullet points of concern for the commissioners. Anybody else? Is there a motion to table this item until next?
So, do we need the motion to have them do
that?
Yeah. I make a motion that council revise the text amendment for the 1992 to provide for the church accessory building and provide it next meeting.
Right. Is there a second to that?
Second.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Thank you. I want to thank the church. They went a long way, and I think working as a team will come up with something that fits everybody's concerns and even the right way.
And you know, and please realize the reason we're kind of spending a lot of time on this is not specifically, since this is a text amendment to the whole zoning, it would apply to all churches. So we need to make sure that everything is very carefully worded in this respect. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Chairman, one thing that wasn't on the agenda that I'm curious about, can anybody provide an update on the council's
Sure. That was presented, I think John presented it, right, because I couldn't make it. I wrote a kind of a summary to the council and everybody. John presented it, and from what I understand, there are a few questions, but it was set for a public hearing, I think, at the next meeting.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, were there any...
October 22nd, I think.
Yeah, I think it is.
And
was there anything that came out of that that... I mean, it was pretty straightforward, I assume, wasn't it?
There was a couple questions. I can't remember.
Okay. Yeah, I talked to somebody. I dashed over. I knew I'd get over late, and I talked to some people after the meeting. They said it was pretty straightforward and just set for hearing, I think. All right, new business, definition of a monument sign. We asked the attorney to work on this just so we have a better definition, and we have that before us right now.
John and I spent a lot of time on this. Yeah, I got the agenda and I hit Google.
Okay.
Yeah, this is all attorney.
But it seemed to fit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any problem with this. So.
I like it. I'm trying to think of, I can't think of a permanent sign that this would not fit.
And would it fit the HOA sign situation?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, we have 4 permanent. 1, 2, 3, and then the one over by Anchor. We have 4 permanent. I think, what do you think? I think this would.
I thought it was 1 and 4.
Huh?
I thought it was 4. I thought we counted 1 and 4.
Oh, you're right.
Would.
B4? Did you think B4?
The one is over by the dunes, Curry Dunes. It's that one that comes in that way. That one, and then there's 3. No, there's only 4. There's only 3.
1, 2, 3, 4. Gajak is 5. We have one by the pool, the 6.
No. These are permanent.
Those are all permanent.
The one by the pool?
Freestanding and monuments.
Yeah, freestanding.
Oh, okay.
These are the monument signs. These
monument, the way this definition reads, it's built by concrete blocks.
Yeah, I was going to raise that issue. To me, when you have a small monument sign, more than likely you're going to have a 4x4 wood being the mounting sort of things, or maybe a 6x6 type of thing. Should we say, or would 4x4 or greater as a... Because I think that when you actually think about a lot of what actually is what we would call monument signs here in Curie Beach, actually have wood mounts on both sides rather than concrete.
Well, remember, the reason we're even looking at this is because I realized we didn't have a definition.
Yeah, right, right.
So I think either way, the HOAs are going to be fine with getting what they want, with the exception with either a monument or a freestanding sign.
Right. But do we want to include with the monument sign definition that you can have wooden supports on both sides?
Chairman, one question before we get to that. If we, and again, I'm not familiar with your sign ordinance provisions. If we insert into the code a definition for monument signs, do we have to go back through the... most sign regulations tell you what signs are permitted or prohibited. So by looking at a definition, are we going to have to review the entire set of sign provisions to make sure that this new term is used?
I remember going through it very carefully. So now that was a couple years ago. But I think we wouldn't have to do that because I think it's moot as to whether it's a pole sign or a monument sign and that sort of thing. I don't think it's defined that way. What it generally does is it refers to size of the sign, the copy, the lighting, these type of things. But I don't think there's any reference to monument or the how the sign is constructed as whether it's a pole sign or a monument sign. And I could be wrong, but I don't remember that being...
Can you refresh my memory why we're talking about coming up with a definition for monument signs?
Because the only way that only places I could find where monument signs are listed is in section 19-373, which is the exceptions. And if you look at exception number 6, it talks about residential monument signs erected prior to 2008 are allowed, and that monument signs must be approved and are subject to the subdivision approval process.
Okay, so that's why we need to come up with the definition. And it doesn't seem to impact on the rest of it.
That's my impression right now.
No, the other interesting thing about it is that on the schedule of the signs on 19-382, it does not include monument on the schedule.
Well, that's a simple insertion into a table. I would assume that, other than all the hassle with dealing with Microsoft tables, I'm assuming that this could, you would take this down as a Word document from the municipal code link and insert a new set of rows and columns into that table. Logistically, I think that's the biggest issue, but where would you, so we'd have to have a column for monument?
I don't know that we should, because Well, how are you this, is that monument signs are an exception and the only way...
Oh, monument signs are an exception.
The only way they can happen is if they're approved and subject to the subdivision approval process. I don't know. You think we need to add something else?
That'd be, again, the code provision for the exception.
No, I don't think we have to have it because a monument sign is also a freestanding sign, and that is already one of the columns of the table. By definition, a monument sign is a freestanding sign. And so we already have a column for freestanding signs, so the monument sign would be included under that column right there on table for section, what table?
1262.7.
For 1262.7.
That page, you'll find it.
Mm-hmm. That's okay with me.
Yeah. So I don't think we need to change the table at all.
So then we're just going to... So if I understand everything correctly, we're contemplating an additional text amendment to Chapter 19 by inserting into 19.1 the definition for monument sign. If we can refine that and agree on what that definition is, then we can bring that back next month as well with a proposed consistency statement and pass both things on to council.
Right.
Is that a game point?
That would be fine with me. And I think it's a good definition. The only thing I think is, since we're talking about this in the context of the HOA signs, I think there's a lot of HOA signs that have wood poles.
Well, that was my point. Do we want to say, take the second line, structure that is a solid appearing base constructed of, take out a permanent material through comma such as, so it reads base constructed of concrete, block, comma, delete, or brick, comma, or wood. Does that work?
No, I mean, I don't have a problem if it's constructed wood. The monument is constructed wood and painted nice. I think a lot of them are. I think most of ours in the village are wood.
Well, the only thing of that, most of the wood I know is freestanding. I thought we were trying to come up with
a... Well, this is a freestanding sign.
Well, okay.
It just has the poles or the posts on both sides.
Yes.
I mean, that's all a monument sign, is that it has the posts on both sides, including rather than a pole sticking up in the middle.
Now, does the last sentence create any issues for us? All other freestanding sign types not meeting this definition shall either be a pole sign or a pylon sign.
I'm not even sure what a pylon sign is.
I don't either. But... Again, I'm not familiar with the town sign ordinance. Does that work to say if it's not a monument sign, freestanding, it is therefore a pole sign? Does that work? Or should I just take that last sentence out completely?
Take it out altogether.
Okay.
The other definitions already covered the other types of signs.
I think we should leave the pole. I take out pylon because I don't know what that means, but I would leave the pole sign definition in there in case at a future date we want to have something that defines a pole sign or something like that, refer to it. It doesn't change anything by having the definition of a pole sign in there because we don't refer to anything as a pole sign, in the sign ordinance.
John, does that work for you?
Well, having
I think
report.
It's going to make a difference either way.
I mean, it doesn't make a difference other than we've now defined what a pole sign is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go with that.
Yeah.
But you can't use that term unless we have a definition.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Or a pylon sign.
If pole sign, is that defined?
No, sir, it's not.
Do we need to define
it? Well, we've defined it right here. We just call it pole.
Oh, okay.
As an exception.
By process.
By process of elimination, yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to say is there's already a definition for freestanding signs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
why I was saying that last line really isn't needed, but.
I mean, if that's the general opinion,
yeah.
You want to eliminate that then?
Yes.
Okay.
I assume that the way our code is set up, we don't need the diagram as well. I can include that, but...
No.
I think, from the way people are talking, I think a monument sign, just the very half of the first sentence would be fine. A freestanding sign that is detached from a building and having a support structure that is a solid appearing base.
Want to, if we provide what the material can be, we avoid plastic.
That's true.
Okay, I've got it. I'll bring it to you next month.
The only thing I want to mention, councils, signs have their own section for definitions.
Okay. What section are we revising?
It's 19371.
Thank you, sir.
All right, is there a motion to ask staff to revise the definition of a monument sign and bring it back to us on the next meeting?
I move that staff provide us with a definition of a monument sign and bring it to us in the November meeting.
Okay. I'll second that. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, now for the fun one. Preserving downtown mixed-use overlay district for smaller hotels. And who would like to get started? You want to, well, since you kind of...
I got a question for our liaisons.
Yeah, that's...
Don't blame me.
I'm not blaming you. I have a question for you. Has there been any more detail of what the vision of what we're trying to... I know you said... Do we want a business small? Do we not? Do we want to overlay?
We just want to maintain the family atmosphere that it is.
All right.
This came to me through the council.
Right.
Or at least members of the council that are concerned now about some pressures for development. I think that's kind of the issue.
Okay.
And so, you know, what we can do to kind of maintain the kind of general feeling that we have here in Currie Beach. So it came from the council to me, and so then I asked to have it put on the agenda. Wouldn't you kind of say that that's how it happened? And so this is kind of just open. Is there anything pressing? Is there anything on the table right now that we should be concerned about that we know? So this isn't really time sensitive. This is something we can spend some time on then, right? Okay. Okay.
The one thing I would love is I would still like to... If we change the overlay, we're still not going to cut 35 foot. No, okay. That's
next year's election, you're Angela.
So it's to provide an overlay to maintain the family business, family atmosphere within the current business district.
Correct.
Within Currie Beach.
Which business district are we talking about? Because usually overlays, you have to define the geography of the overlay. Is there a general feeling about how far we want to create this overlay to preserve?
I don't know,
Councilman. If it's to preserve the current, how does the overlay preserve the district more than what we have, I guess.
We've had the conversations about going to special use permits.
Yeah. Well, no,
so if someone did buy a hotel,
that was before you came on
board, want to tear it down
K
and
Avenue,
put up 12 townhomes,
we didn't overlay it to make that a mixed use.
It would be a very
Okay.
Where
so this is our first attempt at an overlay.
That
I've done overlays in other cities.
It has to be met.
So I was
and
pretty
in
used to
K overlay,
put it in this overlay place.
It's just allowed in the overlay district.
Yeah, you just overlay another zoning.
Can
you overlay? You overlay it.
Hold on, gentlemen. One at a time, please.
Okay. I'm sorry. There's some folks that don't know what an overlay district is. Okay, so we're kind of talking about...
Okay, well, why don't we start there then?
Yeah, let's okay. And the reason we have this is that the prior mayor came to P&Z maybe about 5 years ago or so, I think it was. And I think you were on the P&Z at that time. With the idea, yeah, we did spend months. And I think we wrote a good overlay. But the idea of an overlay here, the reason it's on K Avenue... Mixed use is obviously a very popular thing, so there was a general feeling that for K Avenue right here, that as there were lots and there was some redevelopment taking place, that to have a overlay district that would allow people to come in and build a property that would be a business on the first floor and then have residential on the second and third floor. To do that without changing all the zoning, specific zoning, what you do is you want to do an overlay district on top of that allows that type of activity. So what you have before us right here is the overlay that we worked on, as you said, for months to do this, that allows the mixed-use opportunity along K Avenue, you know, between specific areas. So this is an example. So we do have an overlay district already in Currie Beach that was passed maybe about 4 years ago or so. And so that's the recommendation for dealing with this particular issue, is an overlay type of district.
May I ask two questions? Has this K Avenue overlay district been utilized in any development approvals?
Nope.
And who in this town makes, what's the special use permit process?
Special use process is that they have to make applications, planning, zoning first.
All right, planning, zoning, reviews, and reports, and then who decides?
Council.
Okay.
I should say that I know people have looked at some properties and considered the overlay possibility, the mixed use. Nothing's happened yet, but I know at least one person that looked seriously at a property here to make it into an overlay, a mixed use type of thing.
The empty lot beside Sunoco has been bandied about.
Yeah.
First floor residential, first floor commercial, second floor residential.
With the Quickie Mart?
Yeah.
Do I actually tear that down and do that?
No. The lot beside it.
Mm-hmm. The new lot. Yeah, okay. I'm sorry.
And that would actually require a special use permit by our code as it stands.
Now, how far did the special use go up K Avenue? Up to Fifth Street?
7th Street.
All the way up?
Yeah.
So if somebody wanted to buy the motel behind the Quickie Mart and tear it down and do a business on the first floor hotel, that's allowed under this.
It's allowed in special use.
Well, yeah, right.
Conditions are met of special use permit.
Right. And what
would be restrictive on aesthetics, landscaping,
parking,
everything.
Yeah.
And really, you're getting three things. Your overlay is giving you control over the final product. The commercial aspects of it, you can require exterior design elements for the commercial part of it. And under a special use permit, the deciding body can impose additional conditions that are consistent with the concept.
And the use.
Well, yes, right, yeah. And the use.
So if we have an overlay district, will proposed developers still have to go through the conditional use process? That will always stay there.
Well, that to me is two different animals. You can get, I don't know what kind of conditional zoning you have, but one of the ways you control development is through a special use permit. Another way is through conditional use and rezoning, which is a totally different animal, which I think is more complicated.
I've done several overlays in other cities, and so one is a very powerful tool. I'm a big fan of overlays because it allows you to deal with exactly the sort of things that were issued. When you put an overlay on it, you don't have to build a special use permit part of the overlay. You can actually have an overlay and simply have the conditions in an overlay be specific in itself, that as long as you meet those conditions, you don't need to get a special use permit. Or we did it as a special permit. You can do it either way, but I would recommend we do it the way we did it with K Avenue.
K Avenue is overlay plus special use permit. Yeah,
right.
That's the way I would recommend.
Right.
Absolutely. Because literally you can control who comes in.
Right. But there are some cities that literally have hundreds of overlay districts.
Yeah.
You know, that they wouldn't have special use permits as that type of thing.
Well, by design, if you're applying for an overlay district use, it becomes a special use.
Well, yeah.
Yes. So you do actually have two separate ordinances that deal with special use and overlay districts. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget, while we put that overlay district in, it was to run it all the way up K Avenue,
right,
which had multiple different zonings. And to try to increase our commercial corridor there.
Right. Yeah, and that's the nice thing about an overlay is you can do an overlay. Again, this is for the benefit of people who haven't done overlays. You can do an overlay within a small portion of an existing zoning, or you can include multiple zonings within an overlay. I mean, that's why it's called an overlay. You literally overlay a map on top of an existing zoning structure.
Yeah, I think if you all, for those that are not familiar, if you look at 1984 K Avenue's overlay, starting with the very definition and reading to the end, you get a very good understanding of how overlay districts work. But the thing that does tie it all together is that special use permit.
Right. And I think you're absolutely right. The nice thing about an overlay is you can put a lot of other conditions in there, such as architectural type of thing. And that's why it's a perfect mechanism to do, I think, what the council wants to do, is to preserve kind of a feel for that particular area. You can exclude fast food. I mean, you can put different uses in there. You can put conditions about architectural design and everything like that.
That's in the overlay. I'm sorry, I was looking, not listening. I apologize. Yeah. That's in the overlay. You can do
yes, that. Right, right. Okay, you can. Go ahead.
I was going to say, how, and I'm just getting the lay of land here. So from Fort Fisher Boulevard, you call that B1 to 3rd Street, that goes all the way to 7th. Does it go all the way back? I mean, is it just one block? Is it just
one block? You talking about the overlay of K Avenue?
Yeah, and it's on both sides.
Back on either side of K, wasn't it?
Wow.
Yes. It was just the one block, kind of moving up and down.
But it's on either side.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's a loss at
front K.
Yeah, because if you went the whole block, you'd be all. I mean, that's.
But does it show up on your zoning map, John? The overlay.
I'm reading through right now. Hold on.
Typically, you see it on the official zoning map.
Geographical boundaries of district. The K Avenue Mixed Overlay District shall include and consist of lots the entire length of K Avenue between 3rd Avenue and 7th.
So it's just K Avenue. It's just fronting K Avenue. Can I kind of shift gears a little bit and see if the council has done some thinking about, you know, one, I think we all agree the overlay district would be the way to go about this. And we could talk about how to define it and what the geographic area would be, but how do you have any ideas on how you would define the family feel of the existing hotel, how that would be specified?
Maintaining the motels, not, you know, where it's all townhomes. Condo, something like that.
But there's all types of hotels, for example.
Yeah. Well,
how do you?
Well, we may need a further discussion on that.
The concern is knocking down the hotels and building mega houses.
Mega homes.
Mega homes. That's the real concern, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, one thing I've told.
Which become mini motels.
One thing
with no apartments.
With the inherent problems that they bring.
One
way to kickstart your reflections on this concept, as Chairman knows and as Commissioner Richardson was advised, if you Google beachfront overlay districts, you'll come up with a half dozen ordinance examples that you can study at your leisure and see how they handle that approach. You hit it and they pop right up.
Right.
So the overlay for B1 would be something that, and just layman terms, any future structure must not exceed 4 stories.
Should be 35 feet.
Okay, 35 feet, or, well, I'm trying to think, just to look, if you want to keep it in a moat, if you want to keep it in a family, I mean, how would you describe that overlay, other than just saying it's got to be a motel? I mean, is that okay?
I mean,
so we're gonna figure out.
Okay.
It's doable, but I don't think we've got that concept defined to talk about it.
Okay.
I think your idea of Googling—I've Googled many times when we had this kind of conversations, and you know,
I Googled overlay and I never got anything that made any sense.
Beachfront overlay.
Beachfront overlay. You could also do like downtown. Look at the overlays that are used in historic downtowns where they're concerned about the same sort of thing as people knocking down certain type of things and then building something that isn't.
Look at West Jefferson, North Carolina.
Yeah.
That's a great example.
Okay.
But look, to help your immediate understanding, all of you have the K Avenue district.
Yeah, I have that. Yeah. That's
all right, now let's walk through it real quickly so that you get, because obviously some people still are trying to conceptualize what an overlay district is. Your definition tells you purpose of intent on the top of page 1 lays out a vision. Now, the vision here is not as refined and detailed as you can make it. You get into aesthetic exterior design elements and really, for example, Belleville's got one that requires low country architectural detail. And that would set a visual standard throughout that particular overlay district. But if you look at D on page 1,
just like in a typical zoning ordinance, you have your uses, but the caveat is by special use permit only. If Embassy Suite comes in and wants to build a tower, and one of the requirements for special use is that it has to be harmonious with the existing neighborhood, there's your basis for denying that application in a really crude example.
Yeah.
If you look at E, you've got requirements. Again, these are fairly standard, but you can flesh these out aesthetically any way that you want. If you go, then you, and that includes, you know, what the outside of the building looks like, not only the height. You can get into colors if you want. You can get into architectural detail if you want. You can get into facades and windows and signs, every single thing mm-hmm. that you can think of that sets the vision that you want, you can build into an overlay district regulations that are superimposed on top of the underlying district.
Just very quickly, I've seen overlay district documents that run 50 pages.
Absolutely.
You know, this is 3 pages, but because it's all the architectural design and the look.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you get into landscaping and hardscaping, which is part of the aesthetic package. You get into buffering, you turn the page, you get into lighting. So it's just a very detailed, controlled approach with your ultimate safety net being the special use permit that's got to be harmonious with the character you want and the existing nature of the neighborhood.
The thing I'm going to struggle on is how do you write the things that we just went through, the lighting, the architectural design, in a way to achieve what we're trying to achieve. But I think the best way of starting is trying to find some comparable or examples right out there, I mean, clearly.
And I'm sure California must have Blue Cuba.
That's, you know, honestly, that's where I, you know, I spent a lot of...
I'm talking about beachfront. Yeah. You know, there's got to be some...
I mean, you spend some time in Laguna Beach and Newport Beach
exactly.
and places like that. I'll guarantee you there's overlay districts there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm going back.
Now, I'll be glad...
You can do a research trip and write it off as a town expense.
That's the sort of thing that I'd like to do, this type of research, so I would be glad if it's okay with the commission that I'll take it upon myself to do the research to see if I can come in with some examples.
And send them out an email, links to it.
Oh, yeah, I think I always do that. So, you know, maybe spend about 2 weeks doing that, and I'll send out links to everybody.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a great idea. It's a great group trip.
Yeah, we all go out to Laguna Beach. That'd be good.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Kathleen, yes. Check the budget.
Council, I want to tell you, you're all doing a great job. We moved here from near Philadelphia. We love it here. You guys are fabulous. I just want you to be careful. I don't want no Embassy Suite on K Avenue.
No, we won't have an Embassy Suite.
I don't want it to
change. That's the whole point.
I want to be here for a while. You guys have done a fabulous job.
Appreciate that. Yeah, thank you.
And I just want you to be careful, that's all. Yeah. I would rather pay a little more tax than have to look at an Embassy Suite.
Well, what's funny, I've been a planning commissioner for 25 or 30 years in different cities, and what I find is what you try to do is you try to plan for the worst case scenario. And that's really, you always try to think about the worst case, and that's really why you write this stuff.
I love there's one traffic light. I came from a town that had none out of 7 where I raised my kids in McCungee, Pennsylvania, and I love this town.
It's oh, great. Thank you. That's
guys have done a fabulous job.
Thanks.
Commissioners, let me ask you a question. We were proactive about container housing. Have you driven through Wilmington and seen some of those properties?
Yeah, I have.
I think that we made a good move on that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely.
It could be ramp, yeah.
We'd have stacked containers on the beach.
I'm seeing them in residential, and there's that big development at 17th and Wooster.
Yep.
Aesthetically, I don't like the way they look.
You bet, Council.
I think it would have been Frank Lloyd Wright designed a good thing if someone would build one down.
Didn't you support containers?
I was the only one.
Yeah, that's right. You did. I remember that one.
Around that.
All right.
I went from planning and zoning, then was on council. We voted on it, and no, it was 4-1. I was
the one. The holdout. Yeah. All right, I'll make a motion to table this item, and you know, I'll go ahead and do some research if that's okay. So is there a second to tabling?
Second.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Good. Any member items? I guess usually our member items have to do with the next meeting, agenda item number 8. Is there any conflicts with the next meeting time in November?
It's Wednesday, the day after the election day.
Well, that should be a fun discussion. Then we'll have a lot of laughter and joking and everything.
I'll need some notes. Cause
so that's the day after?
Yeah.
November the 7th.
One way or another, it will be a day.
It'll feel like you'll see this here tomorrow.
So, all right, so there's no problem with the November 7th meeting or the next meeting scheduled first Wednesday in November?
Okay.
No problem? Okay, good. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion. So
second.
Second. All in favor say aye.
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 Great. Thank you very much. And thanks for coming, too.
Nice work.
Yeah, very nice.
We're just like you. We're citizens just trying to make sure the minutes are
staying. Yeah, and it's great.
It gets better. Not staying the same, but actually improved.
You guys have done a great job.
Yeah, I know.
Well, you have to thank like Mr.
Scott. Scott, where are y'all from? We're doing research. Help me understand, because I'm talking about
where in Sedgwick?
I just little books.
Why don't you see?
South Sedgwick.